thanks to our sponsor, Raygun. Have you ever wondered if you could be offering a faster, less buggy application experience for your customers? With Raygun Application Performance Monitoring, you have all the information you need at your fingertips to find and fix errors and performance problems across your tech stack, down to the line of code. With Raygun, monitor the impact of your performance improvements, quickly identify and resolve issues, and see how your code performs in the hands of your customers, saving you time, money, and sanity. I've personally used Raygun and Hyperfish for the last 4 years to help me sleep better at night, knowing the customers we've worked so hard to get are having a great experience. We use Raygun to alert engineers proactively so that we can be the ones to tell customers when we've fixed the problem instead of them calling us to say something's wrong. Raygun.com is my secret weapon in shipping high-quality code. Check it out at Raygun.com and get up and running in minutes. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 387. Today, AC and I are going to catch up on a whole bunch of AWS news, Salesforce is slacking, and Microsoft 365 surveillance. Recorded live December the 3rd, 2020. This episode is brought to you by Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift. The gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you definitely should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new eSign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at nintex.com. Back to the show.
AC, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing good. Black Friday, Cyber Monday is behind us, and I thought that when you have a holiday weekend, it's supposed to be like a slow news day. And holy crap, I mean, there's so much stuff that has happened in the last week. We took 1 week off for Thanksgiving, but so much stuff happened since like
it's a crazy week.
The Wednesday before Thanksgiving that we got to go through. But oh my goodness, man. Yeah,
it's totally nuts. Yeah, it's been a really busy week, actually. It's strange, isn't it? I suppose it's, I don't know, maybe it's the last gasp of news that comes out before the holiday and Christmas break and all that sort of stuff, especially in the US, right?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. It just seems like a big flurry all of a sudden.
It really does. I mean, I know we're going to go through a bunch of this stuff in our show today. And a good chunk of the stuff, too, that we have is around things that are not, that are AWS from their big reInvent conference that's going on right now. It's like a 3-week conference. But yeah, this is nuts. I guess Microsoft is having their big conference next week, or I guess kind of big conference. They're doing the Microsoft 365 Collaboration Conference, what used to be known as the SharePoint Conference. Now it's the virtual event that I think is going on the 9th, 10th, and 11th December. So that's a virtual event, free virtual event that anybody can jump in on, except they're charging for workshops. But
Yes, I will probably tune into that, no doubt, at least in parts. Now, before we move on to some news today, I've got some interesting. The last episode, we talked about Apple's new M1 chip and its laptops. And I think we may have commented at the time or something about ARM and Surface and Windows and ARM and all that sort of stuff. Well, it turns out some very clever AWS engineer has managed to get Windows 10 running on an Apple Mac M1. And apparently it thrashes the Surface Pro X in terms of some benchmarks that this guy runs. So you can go read all about it, but it required some tweaking and twisting and bits and pieces, but this engineer has managed to get it done. He's posted some screenshots and some details about what he's achieved, but I thought this was pretty cool. Like, just, I love it when people just try and work on things like this and get them sorted out. Like, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, this chip, I know I kind of went crazy about it, 3 weeks ago or so, and when it first came out, it was impressive. And then when you started to see the real numbers and benchmarks come out, it's even more impressive. And then with this post, apparently, not only did he go through and put Windows 10 on one of the M1 chips, Windows 10 ARM, but it beats the pants off the Surface ARM box.
Yeah.
Or machine.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not apples for apples, because it is like system on a chip where everything's embedded on one thing. And so I get
it's
not
to users,
totally fair, but
right?
It is to users, and it's quite impressive. Yeah. Everything about this new chip is very impressive. Apple's got... I can't wait to see where they go with this over the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's a big leap forward, I think, for them. So yeah, I just thought that was an interesting thing I read this week. I stumbled across and was like, huh, I bet AC will be interested in that, and some of our listeners. So yes, Apple making good strides there and people hacking on it already seems pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I guess it goes hand in hand with a bunch of other AWS news that we will cover a little later in the show.
Oh my goodness, yeah, just a bit.
The AWS link was the person that did it was from AWS. That's tenuous, but anyway.
Yeah.
We do have a ton of stuff to get through, so should we dive straight into some news?
Let's dive straight in.
This episode is sponsored by AvePoint. If you like The Cloud Show, you will love the Shift Happens podcast with Microsoft MVP and regional director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation projects. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably arise when ambitious people try to impact their workplace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to www.avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag Shift Happens. That's one word, hashtag Shift Happens, wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe today. And we're back.
Okay, I see. Like you said at the beginning of the show, this week's kind of been big. Would you like to kick us off with something you've got bookmarked here that you think is interesting?
Yes, this is interesting because it definitely bit me pretty bad. This is Microsoft. Microsoft really ticked me off last week with some really bad timing. And I thought that everything was all going to be because of AWS melting down, which we'll get to. But Microsoft released a new feature, M365 released a new feature, and in my opinion, they did a horrible job of rolling this out, of rolling the feature out and communicating it to customers, especially because it had destructive impact.
Mm.
So what they did, in their defense, they did announce this on the roadmap. It's roadmap number 63831. And they said they rolled that out in October, although it's clear that it did not hit a lot of people until late November, like the weekend of Black Friday, or the week of Black Friday. But they also did not announce this in the Message Center. I subscribed to the Message Center. I never got anything about this. And effectively what they did is they rolled out some new anti-spam features or capabilities on Microsoft 365, specifically around Exchange Online. Mm. And what this new thing does is that there's this capability that will, you can turn it on, off, or automatic. And by default, it was set to automatic. And what it does is it watches emails that are going outbound from your environment, because this is one of the classic ways of hacking a company, apparently, where you set up in their email an auto forward. So every email that comes into a mailbox is automatically forwarded to another mailbox, you can do it inside your org, but you can also forward it to an organization, to an email box outside of your organization. And the default setting for this was to set it to automatic. And so it used its AI, ML, whatever, to determine if things were okay to be sent out. The part that really pissed me off about this is that this overwrote any existing setting that you already had, or maybe not explicitly, but it effectively did it. So for me, I had two mailboxes that were set up inside of Microsoft 365. They both were set up to forward their mail to an external email address. And when this feature rolled out, it effectively disabled that. And not only that, it removed the setting on those two mailboxes. So it removed the fact that they were even set up to forward mail to an external mailbox. And you say, well, why is this that big of a deal? Because if you're a company that uses Microsoft 365 for your mail, which is lots of companies now, and you use a help desk service like Help Scout or Fresh Desk, or I use one called Teamwork Desk, they all work the exact same way, which is they have a unique email address that is set up for your ticketing system. You create your own mailbox, your own email address, and you forward mail that comes from your email address. So for me, it's info@voitanos.io or andrew@voitanos.io. And all of those get forwarded to our ticket management system. And so the day before Black Friday, when we send out our email to all of our customers to let them know, hey, look, here are the deals that we're offering this week, I didn't get a single email back to me, including I was expecting at least a couple hundred out of offices the day before Thanksgiving in the US. Didn't get a single one. Now that was compounded because of another meltdown that AWS was having, and I couldn't tell if emails were even getting out. But yeah, this was incredibly frustrating. And so we got no tickets, and instead customers got that sent an email to one of those mailboxes where it would get a some sort of an email error message reply that would say mailbox is not set up to forward mail or is not set up, your organization is not configured to allow this feature. Nothing to the actual owner of the mailboxes. They had no idea what was going on. My customers found that out. I didn't.
How terrible is that? It's pretty bad. I bet there's a bunch of people that don't even know it's not working.
Like me, I didn't. And I freaked out on Thanksgiving morning that this was going on. Didn't realize it was where it was starting, but it was going on Thanksgiving morning. After I figured out what was going on and got it fixed, I didn't even realize it was even a new thing that was added. I just thought that Microsoft 365 just broke.
Yeah.
I mentioned it in a Slack team that I'm in or a Slack group that I'm in. And one of my friends, Ben Stedjink, over at the M365 or the MMS IT Pro Cloud Show, he had just hit the same thing with one of his customers. And their episode that was rolling out that day on Thanksgiving Day for their podcast even covered this. And he goes, I didn't even think this was going to affect somebody else. And sure enough, three companies right away, all of us in the same Slack team, all of us have been affected by it. And the other two had no idea it was even going on because they're like, yeah, we haven't sent an email out. So we haven't got any tickets. We just thought it was a quiet week. Nope.
Jeez. Oh, well, if you've got automatic forwarding to outside your organization, I guess, then it's probably not working.
Yeah, you should go check it. So yeah, incredibly frustrating. It's an easy fix. You have to create a new policy. You can say, you go into your Exchange or your anti-spam features settings inside your Microsoft portal. You can create a profile to say, allow it for these mailboxes, but leave it as automatic for all the other, as the default policy. And then you also have to go back into those mailboxes and reconfigure them to forward to the mailboxes.
Yeah, gotcha. You'd think Microsoft could send a note to those customers who would be affected because they can tell who's got it turned on.
That's the thing that pissed me off. And you know what? Here's the other thing that got under my skin about it. And I'm going on too long about this. So the last thing I'll say on it. When I went to go set the mailbox back, to go back to those mailboxes that were affected and to go reset the mailbox that they should be forwarding to, the email address they should forward to, Microsoft or M365 even popped up a warning and said, you're going to overwrite the existing settings for the existing mailbox you have set. But in the box, the text box where I was putting it in, it showed that it was disabled and it showed that there was no mailbox that was set. So it knew that something was actually set. It's just in the UI. It had a UI bug and wasn't even showing that there was something that was actually set.
How about that? Joy.
Yeah, I was frustrated. I vented about it on Twitter to Microsoft 365 and Exchange Online Support. Nobody responded. I told a few people at Microsoft about it. Nobody responded.
Yeah.
So as a small business, that was really bad, especially for such an important weekend.
Yeah, for sure.
So they got a very big nasty gram from me that I won't repeat the words I used here.
Fair enough. Something they did a little bit right in another area is very quickly they've adding Teams is getting CarPlay support. So if you have a CarPlay interface in your car and you're using Teams for calling, then it'll, you know, you'll get a decent experience when you plug it into your car. I thought that was pretty nice.
Very cool. I have to stay on the bad theme a little bit. I guess it's kind of good, but I got to stay on the bad theme a little bit here because this also made big news last week. The Guardian has an article. They have two articles published here because it's the full story on this. The short story on it is that there is a security researcher. His name is Wolfie Crystal, I think is how you pronounce it. He got wind or saw a Microsoft announcement about something called workplace, or he was calling workplace surveillance. They got coined as workplace surveillance, which is basically a feature inside of Microsoft 365 that they rolled out. It's supposed to be about productivity. It's not something brand new. It's kind of been out for a little while, but apparently people weren't as aware of all the stuff that you could do with this. Effectively, what it does is it tracked employees' activity at a very granular and individual level. How many meetings they were having, how much time they were spending in meetings, how many people they were emailing inside and how often inside and outside the organization, chatting, just a lot of stuff that's very much Big Brother, and workplace surveillance is a pretty good way to describe it. He flipped out about it. This Austrian researcher, he flipped out about it, about all these problems that he had with it. It got a lot of attention when it came out, including by a guy by the name of DHH, which some developers out there are going to know how big of a deal he is. When it all came out, I saw it last week. I think it was like on Monday or Tuesday of the weekend of Thanksgiving. A friend of mine at Microsoft said, yeah, they're not going to really do anything about this because pretty much the campus is dead today, is dead this week. Nobody's in camp. Nobody's at campus. I'm like, well, first they're working from home. I get that. But everyone was also gone. Since then, though, yesterday on December the 2nd, Jared Spataro for Microsoft 365 came out and said, you know what? We need to kind of pare some of this stuff back, because really the big thing was that people had an issue with is that there was no transparency to where employees knew that they were being monitored. It was all being done and employers could see the details about their employees, but the employees themselves didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, I'm a little mixed on this. Like, I get it. It's creepy. And it's so I don't feel good about it on that respect. From that respect. But I also, if people want to find out whether you're doing stuff, there's other ways to do it too, right? They can watch how much email you're sending, or check your calendar and see how many meetings you've got in your calendar, or how many calls you're making through Teams or whatnot. It all exists elsewhere. It's just making it, sort of rolling it up into nice reports and making it front and center. All the data exists already.
I agree with you. I mean, you got people who are working call centers that they have to make a certain number of calls a day, an hour or something like that. I mean, I get some of this. I get why there's some concern about it.
Sure.
I think the fact that employers can monitor this much about their employees without the employees knowing anything about it, that's something I can understand people getting concerned about. But
definitely,
it's a technical solution, and it's nice that, you know, it's you saw people's reaction to it, and Microsoft reacted to their reaction. So I guess it's nice to see that stuff.
Good to see some action. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. In other news, Zoom is taking on Office 365's E5 license or E3 plus, you know, some calling features. Zoom have come out with a new set of plans, bundles, I guess, for want of a better word, that are called Zoom United bundles. And so what this enables is all of the Zoom goodness that you're used to for meetings and all that sort of stuff, but you also get phone calling and chat. So now you'll be able to add, or you'll be able to get a bundle for meetings, phone, and chat. There's three different bundles that allow, the most basic bundle allows unlimited free calling within the United States and Canada, and a phone number for every user, right? So people can call in and call out, and that's $250 a year. If you want additional unlimited international calling outside of the US and Canada, then you can add $120 a year to that, right? So what are we up to? $370 a year, which works out to be about $30 a month by my calculations. And that gives you free unlimited calling to about 18 different other countries, like the UK and Ireland, Australia, New Zealand, Austria, Denmark, France, Germany, Italy, Portugal, Spain, Sweden, Belgium, blah, 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 lots. And then there's additional plans above that. So the additional plans above it are really geared towards hosting more participants in the meetings. So for the basic plan, you get 100 participants. In the medium plan, you get 300. And in the big plan, you get 500 and things like that, and single sign-on and all that sort of, and recording transcripts and all sorts of stuff. Anyway, so it's pretty sweet. But what I found really interesting about this is that Zoom are going after Microsoft Teams, and in particular their PSTN calling plans, cloud calling plans to regular phone numbers. And so now with Zoom, you know, a small business or what have you, or even a big business could hold its meetings, talk to other employees as part of a, just straight from within the Zoom client, and then, you know, call landlines and partners and customers and all that straight from within Zoom. That, to me, is a huge shot across the team's bow for calling in meetings.
We learned about this very soon before we were starting to record this episode, so we don't have a full, like apples-to-apples comparison. I did go do a quick check to find out what the Microsoft calling PSTN is for 365 and Teams, and it looks like if you wanted to add that, that's another, I think, 15 or 20. It's another $20 a month. There was a $5 discount when I was looking at it for some reason. So Zoom, if you looked at just the calling part of Zoom and this piece, it was something in the ballpark of around $5 more a month for Zoom than it was for what you got on Microsoft. I didn't go through and start looking at the whole, like, well, then, you know, let's look and see what a Teams subscription, a license is going to cost, or how that breaks down to, like, you know, the e-licenses and stuff. And it's hard to kind of slice and dice it because, you know, Teams is part of Microsoft 365, which is all the collaboration stuff. And there's a lot more to it with like Word and mailboxes and then holding meetings. But I guess, I mean, it is a good option for companies who are not on Microsoft 365 and they want to be able to...
Or who have standardized on Zoom for meetings already.
Right, exactly.
And want to use it for calling as well.
Yeah. It is an interesting move. I agree with you. It definitely seems like a shot across Teams' bow. And there's also an indirect one that we'll get into in just a minute as well. Quite the indirect... Well, I guess it's not very indirect. It's kind of direct.
Yes. So, yeah, so that's some Zoom news.
The other one I think that we saw too was that around Zoom that kind of falls in line with it is that Zoom or AWS said that they also wanted... They named Zoom as their preferred partner, which is interesting. Because Oracle, Zoom, if I'm not mistaken, is hosted on the Oracle Cloud.
That's what we were led to believe, right? But
yeah,
turns out AWS have come out and said that actually it is the preferred cloud for Zoom. So it's like, well, where is it?
I remember when Zoom actually announced that they were going to Oracle, and it was like, huh, it's a weird move, but...
Curious. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Bit of shenanigans, bit of a pissing match starting there, I suspect.
Yeah. There was a bit of big... Well, not a bit. There was also probably the huge news that kind of... that broke this past week, and that Salesforce...
Hey, one thing. I just checked Zoom.com, and it goes to an IP address that's owned by AWS.
Does it really? So maybe it is. That's weird. I wonder what that whole Oracle thing was.
I don't know. Maybe it's part of the cloud. Maybe it's sort of burst capacity or... for redundant capacity for the calling? I don't know.
That's really interesting. Another thing that we saw here, though. So here's probably the biggest news that we had in this past week is that Salesforce has agreed to acquire Slack for roughly $28 billion, $27, $28
billion. Yeah.
That was huge. And there's some stuff in there that I found really interesting, which of course, I mean, not of course, but right when this thing hit, I put something on Twitter. And of course, there was a huge, like, tweet storm fight about between people, all the Teams zealots coming out of the woodwork, which the thing that got so frustrating to me, and I mean, you made the same point that I was trying to make in that whole, the thread with a bunch of other people, and that was Teams and Slack aren't, I mean, people call them competitors. And I know that Slack likes to call themselves a competitor of Teams, and Teams likes to single out Slack for being a competitor, but okay, so maybe I don't get it. To me, it doesn't make sense to call them competitors, because they're not really competitors. They're two different tools for two very different things. They have some overlap of features, but they're not the same thing. They're not, there is some collaboration stuff there, but Slack is not trying to be what Teams is.
I think either of those companies would say that's not right. I would say they both see each other as very much as competitors because they all want the same customers.
Yeah, agreed. They both want the same customers. What is going to be interesting to me about this is how Slack is going to evolve. Is it going to be treated at Salesforce? There's something in the press release that we'll talk that people can go read at. We link to it in the show notes, where it talks about how Slack is going to be is going to get integrated into Salesforce as the collaboration UX for Salesforce. But kind of the point that you and I were making in that, you know, everyone was like going, yeah, but Slack, when it comes to things like e-discovery, and it sucks compared to Teams, like going, okay, e-discovery for small businesses is not important.
I get that it's really important if you're into it.
Yeah, I mean, the consultants, I get
that.
You guys
that
were tweeting
this,
I think, I get if you want to build some hours on it. I get that that's important for you. But for a company like my size, eDiscovery, not important. For a small business of a couple hundred people, eDiscovery is not important. For an enterprise,
Sure. Yes,
it's important. And that's why Teams make sense. But the world is not binary on companies like my size, of one or maybe just like 50 people.
Yeah, there's loads that
don't
need that stuff.
Companies the size of tens of thousands. There's a ton of companies in the middle that absolutely love Slack. Mm. So it's not a I hate Teams thing or it's an I love Slack thing. I'm just curious to see. There's a lot of people that when they saw this that are Slack users were like, I wonder what this means for us.
That's
going
the big
forward.
Question is, and I'd say there's a lot to worry about there. Like, it's yet to be determined, I guess. Hopefully Salesforce don't screw it up, but you know, only time will tell.
Maybe they treat it the same way how like Microsoft treated the LinkedIn acquisition. They just kind of left them alone.
Maybe.
GitHub, they seem to have treated them as their own, although since Microsoft bought them, GitHub seems to have had more outages.
But also a lot more features.
It's true, a lot more features. There's a lot of good stuff coming. Salesforce did buy Heroku and they've basically left them alone. So we'll see where this goes.
Yeah, I think that message in the release about using it to integrate all the collaboration features into Salesforce for various things, like that will take effort and that will take time and distraction from what Slack are already currently working on. right? So it'll have an impact one way or another. But whether it will detrimentally impact how customers use Slack today, that's the uncertain part. I hope not. I really like Slack.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I like them both. I use them both for different things, but...
Yeah, you know the new kid on the block and all this is Discord. Discord has got ambitions beyond gaming. And they've started changing their tagline and all sorts of stuff now to try and start positioning. And I was thinking, man, this is the perfect time for that. Slack's just got acquired. Teams has got all the Microsoft baggage to deal with. Discord could come in and carve out a nice little piece of the market for collaboration. And they've already got all the video calling. They've already got the voice stuff in there. They've already got chat and all of that sort of stuff. Yeah, they're in an interesting position there.
And it's stupid simple to use. I mean, it's my daughter had to teach me Discord. My 11-year-old
yep.
had to explain to me, like, oh, she has a Discord. Apparently, she has a Discord server, but my son, who's 16 or 15, is the mod on the moderator for her Discord server to make sure that nothing bad is happening.
Nice. Yeah, it's definitely all come from a gaming background, right? So, you know, it's got all of that stuff already. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they, you know, they're obviously making moves out beyond gaming now. So we'll see where that goes.
Yep.
Right. Now, you've been paying a bit more attention to a whole bunch of AWS news. How about we take a short break and we'll be back with some AWS news.
Sounds good.
This podcast is brought to you by ShareGate. You probably didn't get into cloud engineering to spend hours manually sifting through layers of data or manually creating reports to understand and explain your Azure costs. Neither did the IT pros at ShareGate, which is why they built ShareGate Overcast. ShareGate Overcast is an Azure cost intelligence tool that reduces manual monitoring and helps you make cost-efficient engineering decisions, and it can help you lower your Azure bill. ShareGate Overcast scans your Azure environment daily and analyzes your cost data. It automatically identifies cost issues and gives you the insights you need to fix problems fast. Plus, with personalized cost-saving recommendations, you can be sure you're only paying for the resources you need. Best of all, you can get ShareGate Overcast for free. Find out more at sharegate.com/cloud show. And now, back to the show.
Okay, I see. There has been a rather large series of things happening in Amazon land over the last week or so. Some good, some not so good.
Yeah.
Why don't you kick us off with some Amazon news?
I'm going to start with the bad stuff because I just railed on Microsoft 365 a good bit. So
this was
I'm going to do some
shockingly
equal
bad.
Opportunity hate. Oh my God. This was like, I call this Black Wednesday.
Yeah.
Because there's Black Friday, which is good. There's Black Monday, which was not so, a couple of Black Mondays, which were not so good with the stock market. And then there was Black Wednesday. And this is what they are calling the US East or the Virginia Kinesis meltdown.
Mm.
If you really want the details of what happened of this massive outage that knocked out a very big portion of the internet, then go take a look at the links that I've shared in the show notes. But effectively what happened is on Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, I believe that was November the 25th, from about 9 or 10 a.m. East Coast time, if not a little bit before that, until about 4 o'clock p.m. East Coast time, a service called Kinesis at AWS went completely belly up. And it stemmed from a failure to, ironically, add capacity. But it's an interesting thing from you tech guys that are out there that are on the IT pro side or the dev side. Go read this and see like what the problem was. And it shows how complicated running a service at scale for one of the public clouds really can be. So much so that they got to the point when they realized what they thought the problem was. They didn't want to start fixing it because they were afraid that if they started rolling down that path, they were going to have to shut everything down and it was going to take a long time to start it back up because they can't just turn the service on and let it start collecting things because it overloads the system. Effectively, what they had to do is they had to just bring on a couple tens or 100 servers at a time and let them stabilize for about an hour before they added more. So effectively, what happened is I figure most of the people, most of our listeners are AWS people, or sorry, are Azure people. So think about it like this. Service bus melted down in Azure. There's this whole system about working with different shards and making sure that you find the right shard that you're working with, not you, but your actual where the messages that are being received. And effectively, the entire messaging infrastructure just completely melted down. The problem is that melted down a bunch of other services at AWS as well. Things like people were saying, like stuff with SmartThings just completely died. A lot of other services just stopped working. For me personally, it was a very acute problem because I was trying to, again, let's go back to Black Friday, small business, I was trying to send an email out to everybody on my email list. And when that happens, when you use like an email service provider, like a MailChimp or an AWeber, ActiveCampaign, I use one called Drip, you get a lot of metrics on your emails that are going out. And I didn't get anything. I got nothing. I couldn't tell if mail was going out or not because they weren't able to process any of the messages. And it was a royal mess. Affected a lot of companies. And so they ultimately got it fixed. It took them about 10 or 11 hours to process the backlog of all the messages. But then that's all the messages getting to their endpoints. And so my email provider, it took until Thursday morning, the following day, when all the stats were caught up and I can actually see that, oh, hey, look, all those mail that were supposed to, all those replies that I was expecting to get from out of office messages, they didn't come through. Hence then the Microsoft 365 error or issue that happened with the anti-spam. So
what a week for that to happen, right? I mean, it's the biggest shopping week in the US of the year, as I understand it, I think, especially the Friday, right? And over the weekend and the Monday. And for a huge portion of AWS to go out like that for that long, that, man, there must have been some people running around with their hair on fire.
The only way, it was the second worst time that it could have happened. The worst time it could have happened would have been 2 days later on Black Friday.
Yeah, on the day, yeah.
That's it. So anyway, there's a lot of stuff in there. I'm sure there's a lot of people at Amazon that are very happy that their reInvent conference that's going on right now is a 3-week virtual event, is not an in-person event, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of customers that would be laying into their account reps at an in-person conference this week.
I bet there's a few interesting conversations going on AWS customers this week.
I've shared one or two with you from some people I know that have been like eye-opening, like, holy crap, that's what a financially backed SLA is like.
Yeah.
But hey, they have had a ton of news that has come out from the AWS reInvent conference. This is like their version of Build and Ignite kind of all wrapped up into one.
Yeah.
We're going to keep this, man, I don't want to bore everybody with a ton of stuff here. I've got a good roll-up post that has a bunch of stuff in it linked in the show notes, as well as details for a bunch of them. But let me run through a bunch of these just really fast. And if there's anything you want to talk about afterwards, then just go ahead and stop me. But they've rolled out a new EC2 instance for Mac machines, allows people to now build and test apps that you're building for macOS, iOS, iPadOS, tvOS, and watchOS. For AWS Lambda, which is their version of Azure Functions, or really the first thing that came about with this, the serverless idea, they now can do container instances with Lambda, but they can also do, so you can now spin up a container instead of having to write your stuff as a Lambda function. You can actually write it as a container and say host container, something that I know Azure Functions has been either has added or is adding, looking to add. There's also, they've now changed the billing structure for AWS Lambda down to 1 millisecond granularity, which is, that's a first. It's rounded up to the nearest 100 milliseconds. So as a tenth of what you would normally be looking at if you were at any other...
Everybody else is to the second, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everybody else is a second.
I'm going to completely disrupt this industry and I'm going to bill by the nanosecond.
A couple things you might be interested in. I've already mentioned containers one time. Got another thing here with EKS. There's a new Kubernetes distro that has been shipped that AWS is hosting. They also now have a public container registry. They had a private one, but now they have a public container registry as well. Mm-hmm. Here's a one that's really interesting that I want to dig into more. Take a look at this. It's called EKS Anywhere, coming in 2021. This is effectively going to allow you to have your Kubernetes nodes managed. This looks like similar to what Microsoft has, but this is EKS or Amazon going multi-cloud, because now you could have Kubernetes nodes in an Azure and in AWS and let AWS manage those with their service, which this is kind of, if I'm not mistaken, we could do the same thing with AKS in Azure, with the Azure Kubernetes service, by having your nodes live anywhere. They don't have to just be in Microsoft to let them manage.
Yeah, and like Azure Arc as well, right? Like managing your on-prem infrastructure in Azure. Wow, that is cool. I'm definitely going to look into that. That's really interesting.
Two other things to throw out. There's a lot more news here, but two other things I thought were kind of interesting. I know that you guys are a PostgreSQL fans. There's a new thing called Babelfish that has gone open source, which is effectively a SQL Server connection point to PostgreSQL databases. And there's another thing that they've added here. Let me make sure I grab this so I don't screw this one up. It's called Amazon S3 Strong Consistency. It delivers strong read-write after consistency. And what this does is that after you write an object, an overwrite or delete of an existing object, every single subsequent request immediately receives the latest version of that object. So that's not eventual consistency. That is strong consistency, saying that when I write it, I should be able to read it right back. And it may not be, if I'm depending on the region that I'm going to.
Some workloads, that's really important. Yeah.
There's that. There's a ton of additional stuff there. I'll put a bunch of notes in the a bunch of links in the show notes. But
the Mac instances was really interesting to me. Like getting Mac minis in EC2 to do your Mac development, testing, or builds, or all sorts of stuff. It's been a bit of a pain for people in the past.
It has. There are dedicated companies that have like Mac farms, just rows and rows of minis. A lot of people want something like this specifically for rendering farms.
Yeah. Nice. Gosh, what a deluge of news from AWS. That's pretty exciting.
It was a slew.
Nice. How about we go and do some picks?
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show.
All right, AC. Now, I've taken a sneak peek at your pick, and I like it because I've been following the story. So what about for our listeners? Why don't you enlighten them? Or actually, you know, you enlightened me a little bit too. I knew this had happened, but I hadn't seen the video. So
yeah, the video's sad. I think I'm saying this right. The Arecibo Observatory?
Yeah, most people say it as Arecibo.
Arecibo, that's right. So this is a link to the National Science Foundation, and it talks about the observatory. It's a radio telescope that's been around since the 70s. If you've seen the movie Contact, it's near the beginning of the movie as well. Well, it's no more. So a couple of weeks ago, I almost used this in my show notes, in my pick recently, where they had two of the cables. They have this giant dish that's in the ground. They have the dome, that the listener dome is sitting at the top. It's suspended above the dish with a bunch of cables across three towers. Two cables connected to the towers had broken recently, and they had decided that there was some damage done to it already, and it was just kind of like it's going to be too expensive to try and fix, and so they're just going to disassemble it.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, I can't remember exactly what day this was.
Yesterday, I think it collapsed.
Was it yesterday?
Yeah.
So there's now a video that you can go take a look at it, but with the load that was on the existing cables, it looked like one more cable broke, and the dynamic load that was spread across all the other ones was too much. And there is now a video of the cables and the dome giving way and falling in and collapsing inside the dome. And
yeah, it's really sad.
It's really sad because
it's unparalleled, right?
It is. It's in Puerto Rico. You can see it from space.
Yeah, it's massive.
Yeah.
The bit I was confused about is I don't think they collapsed it on purpose. I thought it was an uncontrolled collapse, but they just happened to be filming it with a drone at the time.
They were looking at a film, examining it
yeah.
when the collapse actually happened. And then they have another video where that was sitting like ground level, and it was like showing it falling, coming, flying at it as the thing gave way and it was coming in at it. So it's
crazy, isn't it?
The videos are new. I found these this morning. They weren't available to us before because the video actually came out today, I think.
Yeah, that's what's really interesting about this is the footage of it actually happening. I thought it had collapsed overnight or something.
Yeah, I did too.
Sad to see.
It really is. How about you? What you got for us today?
I've got a bit more of a silly one. Well, silly / interesting. I don't know if you've ever heard a rumor. You know Microsoft Bob? You know the app that is sort of the butt of a lot of jokes from Microsoft from the like mid-90s or something?
Yeah.
That Melinda Gates actually worked on. She was the product manager for Microsoft Bob. Anyway, before her and Bill hooked up. So there was a secret rumor going on that Microsoft Bob had secretly shipped as part of hundreds of millions of copies of Windows. And 25 years later, a guy called Dave Plummer, who's quite a famous, at least in Microsoft circles, he's quite a famous Microsoft engineer. He'd been at Microsoft for a long time and worked on a bunch of Windows stuff, has come out and said that yes, indeed, it was him and he hid a copy of Bob in like 500 million copies of Windows that went out or something like that. But he did it not as a joke. He did it for a real valid reason. And so we've linked to a video to his YouTube channel called Dave's Garage. He's got all sorts of really interesting videos about Microsoft history, of how things came and all that sort of stuff. But he explains he took a copy of Microsoft Bob and used it as, in effect, digital. But he describes it as digital ballast. He just needed a big blob of bits to use as the seed for the key to do the copy protection for the CDs. So he needed enough digital ballast to put on a particular SKU of the CDs that it was cryptographically different enough from the other types of CDs that were going out so they could do copy protection on them. Anyway, so he goes through the whole thing. But in effect, he basically comes out and says, yeah, 25 years after the anniversary of Bob, I'll come out and admit it was me that put Bob on X many hundreds of millions of Windows CDs. It's not sort of
that's
in
a good
Windows.
Find.
It's just used as a big binary blob of stuff to help do copy protection.
Man.
He's got some pretty cool videos, though, about all sorts of different topics. You should definitely go check it out because he's into all sorts of interesting things.
That's cool, man. I haven't seen... I was not aware of this. I'm scrolling through a couple of his videos. This is awesome.
Yeah, he's a pretty smart dude. He lives nearby me, actually. But anywho, so go check out his channel.
Very cool. Nice pick, man. Very nice pick.
All right, AC. Well, it's been a huge news week. We had a break over Thanksgiving, so thanks for bearing with us, listeners. But we're back in action, and we will be back in action next week, too, with a whole new show.
Sounds good to me, man.
Rock on.
I will see you next week.
Cheers.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in your favorite podcast app. It helps people find out about our show and grow our audience, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play it on the show. You can also subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll get notices of each episode as well as the show notes sent to you directly each week. We'll be back with a new episode next week. Thanks for listening.